getting started. It is 7:02 on July 7th, and we're going to be in the Cedar Hills Community Recreation Center. We'll start our meeting with a pledge led by Councilmember Anderson and the invocation given by Councilmember Ellsworth.
Please rise and join me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our Father in heaven, we are grateful for this day to gather together as a city council and city leaders. We are grateful to live in this wonderful nation, this part of the country. We pray for the safety of this nation's citizens at this time, that we may continue to have peace where we are, whether we pray for peace, where there is trouble at this time. We say the same thing, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you, McKenna. Item number two is an approval of tonight's agenda. If somebody would like to make that motion.
I'll go ahead. All motion that we approve tonight's agenda.
Motion made by Councilmember Smith. Is there a second? Second by Councilmember Ellsworth. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Moving on to item number three is public comments. So can we hear who would like to speak during public comments?
Not me, Karen, supposed to be here.
Okay. Yep. All right, so we will close the public comment portion of our meeting and move on to city reports. City manager and mayor council. Just as a heads up, we do have a youth from Cedar Hills who is going to be coming tonight to it's not on our agenda, so there won't be a vote taken, but she wants to present on a adopted trail program throughout the city. So when she gets here, we'll let her speak, but in the meantime, let's go ahead and move on to city report, starting with Mr. Vigor.
Yes, I want to start by recognizing the golf course. They had an excellent year. They really exceeded, I think, everyone's expectations, and even during a difficult time as it's been in the last few months and keeping up with all the restrictions. So we want to recognize them, and that is reflected in the final budget numbers, which we saw at the last meeting. Events have started up again, and we do have some events scheduled, and we're going to be talking about some of that tonight, but there are some restrictions. So if you see on the floor, there are some indications about where people are to stand for the lines, but we're excited to begin having events in our building again. And rec programs have also started again. We have t-ball and soccer going right now. Our pickleball tournament starts tomorrow. We do have signups open for fall soccer, flag football, and a youth pickleball tournament, which will be later this month. And just one final thing is we want to remind people that it is illegal, believe it or not, to light fireworks in city parks. We saw a lot of them this last week, and we just want to remind people that it is not legal. So thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councilmember Anderson.
I'm surprised not at the last meeting that we had. I just wanted to report back on my experience with the graduation parades coming through the city. I don't know how it went in your neighborhoods, but our neighborhood, it was a roaring success. And I secretly hope that next year we get to do individual graduations for every senior at every high school. It was fabulous. And people said they would love to do the graduation trip again next year. So I think that was fun. And who else supported? That's all I have.
Thank you. That's
all I have. I just wanted to talk about Harvey Park. We, as a family, I see my grandchildren almost every evening. We pop off a little bit. And so it's been like we've been trying to go 7 and thinking the water would turn off at 8 and hasn't turned off until 9. Which is good and bad because my plan is for the to turn off at 8 so I can figure out how long without them. And a lot of the other parents are like, it's at 8. Anybody know why it's not turning off? So anyway, that's it on the water. But and at the same time been a little disappointed at, you know, behavior we've seen over there. I think I mentioned a couple of other times that I've never in my life seen a park where I've got adults in line ahead of children to play on things. Literally adults waiting in line for a swing or you know, whatever it would be. So that's been an interesting thing, but you know, all in all, great park. People are definitely taking advantage of it. So kind of kudos to everybody who got that going for us.
Thank you. As far as my reports, we did receive our CARES Act funding, so we have that full amount, and staff is working on allocating that now. And then as far as the $20 million that was parked out, at the county level for economic recovery. I do sit on that committee. We meet every Tuesday, and we're in the process of putting together how businesses will apply and who will be eligible. And our goal right now is to have applications, have the marketed in July, applications coming in the 3rd to the 10th of August, so that way funding can go up at the end of that. But once we have all of that information together, I believe they've been reaching out to the city clerks, or if not, they're intending to get information about all of the licensed businesses in every city so they can email that out to all of them.
They already have.
But they have, okay, wonderful. Mailing out to all of the small businesses to let them know this is here, here's how to apply, and we'll make sure that we have that marketing material ready, that we're sending it out through our channels as well. That's it for me. I'm on a roll.
Nothing to report.
Elsewhere, elsewhere.
Just hope everybody had a fun 4th of July.
Councilmember Geddes.
Nothing to report.
All right, so we will then turn it over to Cameron. Cameron reached out and asked if she could come present to the council on her ideas for an adopted Rebecca Trail program. So Cameron, do you want to come up to the microphone here?
So I'm Cameron, and I had an idea to do an annual trail cleanup, so that kind of clean up the debris and make the trails a little bit better. And so it would be every last Monday in September. It's like the last Monday of every September. We'd do like a big one where everybody could come and help. And then, so they would just be removing garbage and debris from the trail and just surrounding the stream, not in the stream and stuff. And we would probably need a dumpster, and we'd probably put it in a heritage park. Or we could have dump passes for volunteer truck drivers to go and take the debris to the dump. And then the adopt a trail is like a 1 year commitment by Cedar Hills residents to adopt like a fourth a mile portion of the trail throughout Cedar Hills to keep it clean by removing garbage and debris. Adoptees would pay $25 a year. You can only adopt 1 year at a time based on interest. This $25 fee would probably go to garbage bags and a plaque with their name posted on the trail, on trail markers where they have adopted that section. We need to have permission to do the annual cleanup of the adopted trail, and permission to post plaques on the trail markers for adoptees, and dumpster dump pass approval.
Thank you, Cameron. Is there anybody else from your group that wanted to speak about this?
No, okay.
Well, I will tell you that I love the idea. We've had a lot of discussion lately in our city about portions of our trail that aren't absolutely as nice as others, and so having a community program where the community comes together and takes some ownership for that, I think is a fabulous idea. And to me, the $25 a year makes sense, because that would cover those costs. I don't know if you ever looked at plaques before, John, or to know if I have an idea of the cost, but
no, I don't believe so.
But I can't see any issue with having some signs up along the trail just saying adopt the trail program, and then this is the thing that by this family or whatever the case is. So I would love to hear input from the council, but I would also like to hear from staff on what you would propose to be next steps for them.
No, I think this is a great idea. I've walked the trails with the mayor, and I've looked in. I've seen the issues that we have, and the debris is not just it's not just litter. Sometimes it's just an overgrown area, and sometimes you get branches. You get a lot of just debris. Is a great word to use. I really think this is awesome. I think this is a great program or a great proposal. I think at a 1 year commitment, quarter length trail, I don't know about the $25 a year, but it's probably something in that ballpark. I just don't know how much a plaque and the sign would cost. Initially, you're paying more for the sign, and then you just replace the whoever's adopting that trail. But in order to do the program, I think if you want to work with staff and come up with a proposal for the council to actually vote on, because tonight we're just doing a discussion on it, and come back and do a proposal where we actually ask the council to vote on it and allocate any funds that the city may need to commit to it, we'd want to have a better understanding of that one. I don't imagine it would be a lot of funds, quite frankly. But it would, and then we probably want to identify which trails, because we have the, obviously the Forest Creek Trail, which is the one everyone thinks about, but then we have trails throughout the city that aren't necessarily the ones that people think about when we talk about the city's trail system. So we'd want to be very clear about which trails people are adopting. But no, I think this is something that you can work with staff, and if you want, I hate talking into these, if you want, I'm happy to give you my contact information, and we can sit down and meet and get in touch with the right staff members if you'd like.
Tracy, are you still on the Parks and Trails Committee?
I am not. I just recently resigned.
Okay.
Although they never did have any budget or inclination to address the issue on the trail. It seems like a bigger issue, and the one that we initially...
Would you go up to my call? Okay. Have you on my recording?
Do you know who this is? Tracy Lee. Tracy?
So the reason that we got together as a group and what we were initially discussing was the section of the trail that runs parallel to Forest Creek Drive. There are a lot of broken branches, dead branches, garbage, litter. Not so much that, it's more the branch issue. Some of them are really dried out. They're a fire hazard. Some of them are hanging precariously up there too. So that's kind of what we were focusing on.
Right. Okay. So, do you want to work with staff then, not Parks and Trails?
I think initially we'd work with staff. We can take it to the Parks and Trails, but like Mrs. Lieberman said, there's not really a purview there. They haven't really taken that on. The only oversight that the Parks and Trails Committee has had in the past is on the annual day of service. They've usually sent a group of people up and down the trails to clean up.
Okay. And that didn't happen this past year.
Thoughts from the council?
This is right up my alley. This is the greatest idea ever. When I walk on the trail, I always bring a bag of grab trash, and I know that everyone doesn't do that. So a day that people can get together and take ownership in September of your city's trails and clean up, it'll make them think the next time that they down something on the trail. And I think adopt a trail is a great idea. And like Mr. Goodwin said, there are a lot of trails in Cedar Hills. There's one that goes right behind my house that could adopt. They're all through the city, people could do that, and I bet there'd be a lot of interest for people to do that. And even if it's a quarter of a mile, like you said, that's not very long. It's not very much to take care of. So I think that's a great length to adopt and a really great idea. I'm 100% behind it.
So we were kind of thinking this would be like a pilot program, this section, to see what the level of involvement and commitment would be and how we would manage it. Because some of the limbs and things like that are rather large. So, you know, well, who we can rally, what kind of equipment we can rally, and you had thrown up the idea of a dumpster, which would work, but then Cameron and some of the others had thought about people could throw into the back of the house, and but I definitely see potential for this expanding.
If I were to chime in on dumpsters versus dump passes, I would probably give the people that adopted a trail an extra couple dump passes a year, three or four, just because whenever we put a dumpster out, and Jeff can attest to this, before you can fill it with leaves, it'll be filled with mattresses and tires.
Right.
So.
Right. No, that's a great idea.
Any other thoughts from council?
I love it. I always, I think that, I think every service day that the park tells, so people come out for that type of thing. I think it's a good idea. People that consistently walk the trail probably have a sense of ownership to prove of the trail. Probably have a favorite section of the trail that they do want to good off. I like everything that's been shared.
I think it would be a nice to hit, honestly. It would be the voluntary trail system if people pick all up. Because, especially with the shutdown, the trail's been so busy with people getting out and walking, and they see it all. I think it's brilliant.
too, and I think people are, you know, we talk about people not being involved, and sometimes they just need a vehicle. And I think people are, they want to participate, they want to help. So every time we can provide those opportunities, I agree with Ben, I think people would be really interested. So I know my family would be.
So yeah.
I was going to say, there's a lot of interest, especially from the AIM board, because their homes back up to that one particular section. And there's always kids in there.
Sure.
You know, playing and fighting out and stuff.
So Cameron, at the end of the table there is Chad O'Gay, but he's our city manager, and he's going to give you some contact information. So if you want to keep in contact with him and submit your proposal, and he can help you decide
paper.
What you said, I'm going to bring those closest to him, whatever. Then you can bring it back to the council for an
official vote. It's different. I know, right?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Council, we're going to move on to item number 6, which is a review action and public hearing on an ordinance amending city codes bylaws 9, 10, and 11 related to the Board of Adjustment. I'm going to open the public hearing first. Is there anybody here who wanted to speak to this item? No one here, so I will close the public hearing and turn the time over to the
I think it's really cool when kids do something like this and present the city council. Okay, so this item was before the Planning Commission last week, and I'm going to try my best to convey the differences of opinion that staff had versus the city of Planning Commission. So if you want to listen to that, you can go, I guess, to the decision tonight. But I hope I can clearly express the staff's intent as it relates to this change versus the Planning Commission's understanding of which. So I hope that I can convey that. But let me back up and just talk a little bit about, because in order to understand that difference, I think it's important to understand what exactly the Board of Adjustment is. But every municipality, they must have an appeal authority established by ordinance. And that's after the Planning Commission has recommended to the City Council how appeals should be conducted. And it does not need to be a Board of Adjustment. It can be any sort of appeal authority. So the question tonight is appeal authority of a Board of Adjustment, which is made up of residents of Cedar Hills, versus appeal authority of a hearings officer, which is a trained professional that's steeped in land use law. The appeal authority may be one person or maybe several. There's not a resident requirement, so it doesn't have to be, there's not a geographical requirement, or it has to be a resident of the community. What the person needs to be is trained, impartial, and credible to the decision that they're making. If it's an individual, they do not need to hold a public meeting, but if it is a board, they do need to have a meeting that's posted. In their decision making, the public clamor is irrelevant, as the decision is made based on facts. So the issue is, was the decision that's being appealed, was the decision made, was it correct? Was the ordinance correctly interpreted? Was it legal? And it's not, what do the neighbors think, and do we like this person? The appeal authority is not only, he or she not only hears variances, but also interpretations of administrative application of the ordinances. So it's beyond just, I want a variance from this rule, but it's also interpretations of by the code enforcement officer or myself. If we interpret a code one way and this person feels that they've been aggrieved and that's been interpreted wrong, they can appeal that decision. And then municipalities may have more than one appeal authority. So it could be based on what type of appeal it is. So I do know that some municipalities have adopted a hearing officer specifically as it relates to group homes. That'd be one that is kind of a sensitive subject and kind of its own section of law, if you will. But I'm reading this straight from the Utah Land Use, this next part, straight from the Utah Land Use Regulation Desk Book. It says, it would be great if every land use authority always objectively applied the law of the jurisdiction to the facts of the application. They don't always get it right. They are human. Even when the land use authority gets it exactly right, opinions can differ as to whether the law was applied correctly. No matter how tightly the local land use ordinance is written, creative minds find ambiguity. And that is very true. It is the appeal authority's role to correct land use authority errors and to interpret local land use ordinances. The appeal authority acts as the jurisdiction's final word on the application, insulated from the heat of the original land use authority's decision. The appeal authority serves as the jurisdiction's last chance to get it right. The appeal authority is the person, board, commission, agency, or other body designated by ordinance to decide an appeal of a decision of a land use application or a variance. Historically, Board of Adjustments have served as the appeal authority for most appeals in most jurisdictions. Because appeals and requests for variance are infrequent, and because expectations for appeal authorities to act in a quasi-judicial manner have risen in the last decade, many jurisdictions have replaced their Board of Adjustments with a professional hearing examiner or a professional Board of Land Use Appeals, which would be in the hearings officer. So because the criteria, if you haven't been involved in a variance dispute, the criteria for a variance is strictly controlled by state law. There's five criteria that have to be met in order for a variance to be granted. And so there's not a lot of leeway. That's why it really comes down to the facts of the case. And it's important to get it right because the variance runs with the land, not with the individual. So if the individual gets the variance and it was applied incorrectly and they move away, it runs with the land. So it's important that the city in these circumstances get these things right. So currently the city of Cedar Hills has a Board of Adjustment. And I've been discussing with our legal counsel for the last, honestly, year and a half, really, to move the Board of Adjustment from the board, which is made up of five community members. Currently only three seats are filled. It's actually a very difficult position to get filled in terms of commissions on the city. And moving that to a hearings officer. Now, when we presented this to the city, to the planning commission, the concern was that they felt that the community should be involved, that it should be a member, that it should be a decision made by the community members, not some arbiter of justice who's kind of removed. And I substantially disagree with that stance in that it's not, like I said, it's not based on, well, this is my neighbor, or this is a good person. And in fact, I've heard those arguments made kind of subtly by the Board of Adjustment, not recently, years ago. But I remember one instance when a member said, he's my neighbor, and I really like him. I thought, that's a terrible reason to grant a variance. So there's a real need for getting variances right. We have recently changed our code as it relates to applying for variance in that, you know, I think it was 5 years ago, our code read that the Board of Adjustment would hear decisions or appeals from the City Council as well. And that was, again, highly inappropriate in that Board of Adjustment should hear administrative decisions that staff makes. It should hear appeals for Planning Commission decisions, but you should not have an unelected body of residents hearing appeals from the elected body. So we've changed that. Appeals from City Council decisions should go straight to District Court. Anyway, so the provisions that we have here, and the reason it was before the City for the Planning Commission was that there are many references in Title 10 to the Board of Adjustment, and it's really just semantics, because even if we changed it, even if we changed all that language to appeal authority, or hearings officer, it still could be a Board of Adjustment. But there's, like I said, there's a substantial disagreement on fundamentally how the Board of Adjustment should operate. Hiram is here with us tonight, and I've asked him to chime in as a third party here, so I invite you to share your thoughts, Hiram.
Yeah, I would just concur with a lot of what Chandler has spoken about. The trend in Utah, though you won't see it in every city, there is a trend moving away from the Board of Adjustments and moving towards a hearing officer. Now, the reason for that is I see basically four reasons. The first is, Chandler talked about, is impartiality. That's what we're seeing with this hearing officers. They don't necessarily have to be citizens of the city. In fact, most of the times that not citizens of the city, Craig and I serve as a hearing officer. Craig is a hearing officer for several different cities around him, even that he doesn't reside in. And so you get this impartiality, you don't have this public clamor that, oh, I know that guy, he's a good guy, he's a good gal, or she's a good gal, so I'm gonna I'm going to say, yeah, we can have a variance for that, or interpreting, I mean, under the code, the hearing officer does interpret land use decisions to a certain extent, right? If the planning commission is interpreting some zoning dispute or something like that, right? It can be appealed to the Board of Adjustments, you know, kind of saying you're making some decision based not on the law. So that's one of the main reasons. Next reason is a hearing officer is legally trained, right? That's if you see here in the proposed amendment, we have that explicit in there, right? There's certain qualifications that have to be met, they have to be trained. And there's something to that I can just share from my experience in this manner. I'd serve with Craig Hall, a city attorney there, do several other hearing officer disputes for other cities. One in particular, we had Rocky Mountain Power over, it was an easement dispute, in fact, that had to do with zoning. And we had, you know, three sets of attorneys from mega law firms here in Utah, all representing different parties, representing the citizen body as a whole. They had their own set of council, and Black Mountain Power had their own set of council. And they were going through super complex legal analysis on what should happen. Now, if you turn that over to a layperson, I'm not saying that a layperson couldn't figure it out, but as your appeals officer or your appeals board, it's supposed to serve as your last resort before the city gets sued, right? Before the planning commission gets sued. Or whoever is making the decision. So you want your appeals authority to be legally trained, right, to get it right. Craig, on several instances, has denied certain requests or certain decisions with the planning commission on procedural aspects that they failed to follow in coming to their determination. Right? They had to jump through certain procedural hoops. You can send it back down for that. That way, it doesn't go up to the district court, and the city have to pay a ton of money to fight that out in court, supporting their planning commission court. So it serves as a stop there, and I think being legally trained is important. And then you continue to get consistent results this way. And finally, I think the last one would be cost. Now, Board of Adjustments doesn't necessarily cost a city a ton of money. A hearing officer would be paid hourly rate, but they generally aren't terribly expensive at that. But the cost that it does save the city overall is what I mentioned earlier in terms of stopping the city from being sued, the district court getting the correct legal analysis. And an important point is when any sort of decision is actually appealed beyond the hearing officer and to the district court level, it is based solely on the record that has been established by the appeals authority board of adjustment. Right? When you have a hearing officer, they understand the contours of that standard, and so they make sure that the record is very clear, very adequate, and serves to help the appeal at the district court level, where a board of adjustment might make different comments based on public climate and other things that wouldn't meet that standard.
Thank you, Ira.
I think one last thing to maybe share the planning commission's point of view was they thought, well, what if you appoint counsel for the Board of Adjustment? So they had this, rather than appointing a hearings officer, you hired an attorney specifically to advise them. So that was another idea that they threw out, but you're still incurring the cost of that individual's time. And not only that, there's sometimes when the public pressure, this is my opinion now, not the planning commission, but there's sometimes when public pressure is so great that I don't care what attorney's going to say, that if it's your neighbor, you're still going to vote wrongly whether or not you're seeing counsel to the contrary. So what we have before you tonight is all the references to the Board of Adjustment in City Code and what those changes would look like. There's changes in Title 9, Title 10, and Title 11. The most substantial changes being the functionality of the Board of Adjustment, which is found in Title 9, 1C. That
I think substantially this person would operate the same, this hearing officer would operate the same as the current Board of Adjustment. They would be appointed with the, by recommendation of the mayor with the advice and consent of the city council. And then maybe there's not a period of time that they would serve. It would be at the advice and consent of the city council. So if you felt that that person was not doing their job appropriately, that person can be removed any, at any point. You can see the criteria in there for a variance, and then finally 9-1C-4, it says that any person adversely affected by any decision of the hearing officer may petition the district court for a review of the decision. So then, like Herm said, the next step for that appeal process would be the district court. I hope you had a chance to review this code. There's kind of a lot of it here tonight. We're proposing a change. Given what I've said, I've shared staff's opinion, we've heard opinion from city's council, and I've tried to best adequately describe the planning commission's thoughts on this matter as well. I have notified the Board of Adjustment the day that we were talking about this tonight. I didn't get those same concerns from them.
So I'm going to add my opinion as well.
Okay.
I think it was 2006 when land use laws were really changed, fundamentally changed in Utah. So prior to 2006, the laws were such that cities really did have a lot of leeway and flexibility in interpreting their code or making their code fairly broad and generic so that way they could make their decisions based upon what neighbors felt or public plan or whatever the case was. And that really changed in 2006 and went in the opposite direction, which was a greater focus on property rights, and cities have to be very clear and specific in their ordinances in order to apply them. There cannot be ambiguity. It has to be very clear what's expected in your land use code. And so we saw ourselves as a city a few years back that our code was not written, was not updated past 2006, and that caused us some issues. We have since corrected it, but at the time it caused us some issues. And one of the things that was clear as I went through that process, especially as we went through the property rights ombudsman, was that cities were not going to lean towards the view of the city. They were going to lean towards the view of the property owner. And so when it comes to Board of Adjustment, I share Hiram's thoughts and Chandler's thoughts, which are it met less than five times since I've been elected. They don't meet very frequently. And so because their decisions can go to court, and because the laws regarding land use have really changed since 2006, to me, it allows us the world to have that appeal for land use. Somebody who really understands land use law to keep the city on the right track when it comes to any legal challenges. And then as far as the cost goes, again, we don't have a hearing officer or the Board of Adjustment meet very often, but my understanding at least is a substantial amount, all of the costs would be passed on to the person asking for the appeal or basically appealing the decision. So they would be assessed a fee, whatever that looks like, to pay for the hearing officer. So the city's not expending a ton of money on this process. It would be up to the person who's filing for the appeal. But to me, this makes all the sense in the world to keep our city legally on sound financial or sound legal ground when land use decisions are being
One thing of note, we do get a lot of requests for variances in the city, and as a staff, I've had a number of these conversations, and Jane Kate has had a number of these conversations where before we just send them the application to appear before the Board of Adjustment, we walk through the five criteria the state has outlined, explaining to them what they're supposed to be filling out. And many times, I'd say vast majority of times, and it's not an effort to dissuade them from appealing, but to really understand what the process is, that it can't be economical. Really is what a lot of them come down to is, I know you want to build an addition on your house, but just because you want it doesn't mean you get it. So we do get a lot of requests, but they only come to fruition in terms of the Board of Adjustment meeting about once every year and a half.
The state is very particular on what we can approve or consider.
What feedback did you get when you discussed it with the board? Is it still Bill Null, Sherrill?
Yeah, so right now it's Bill Null, Sherrill, Hagen, and
Craig
Hansen. I emailed them last week before the planning commission meeting, and They wanted statues.
Oh yes, they wanted a statue. To thank him for his time, so
that's I think that they recognize, I tried to explain to them, moving to a hearing officer is really best practice for municipalities. And another challenge that we've had is you've got 5 seats on the Board of Adjustment and have been sitting in 3 seats for a couple of years now. So in order to convene a Board of Adjustment meeting, we have to have 100% of attendance. And since they don't meet regularly, sometimes that can be very challenging. And by state law, you're supposed to, once you've got that application for a variance, you have, I think, 30 days to schedule that hearing. So,
and right now, we have 2 attorneys on the Board of Adjustment.
Yes.
Bill, I know, does development, so you're probably somewhat familiar with that, but we may not have that luxury. I think that that just happens. If we could be taking anybody to fill the 3 spots out of the 5 in the future.
I don't know, part of the lives. I really want somebody to ask, but they know.
I don't believe that they are. But I do want to add this footnote. This is not a referendum on the current Board of Adjustment in any way, shape, or form. This is something that I have been trying to push for a number of years, in that I felt like a hearing officer is the best practice for this city to go to.
I would, I support based on reasoning, since I'm right here today. I'm thinking about this as a review that, you know, it's still the same standards. You have an objective person that might be beneficial to have less ties to the community, so to speak. I would suggest defining legal training and experience. What ultimately, in staff and mayor, pick out of the available people and share it with the council. If there's a minimum standard that we want, maybe they have a juris doctorate, maybe they need a member of the bar, maybe they just did work in like use. I don't know. But I would define that a little bit more.
My initial thoughts on this would be to try to piggyback on, find out who some other cities are using, and not try to let somebody cut the teeth here for our city. I prefer to just find some other groups or individuals that serve as land use attorneys, similar to what Craig does for a number of other jurisdictions. And that's actually how I came in contact with Craig about the city attorney position. See, we talked about it when I was here with waste management. But I think that there's a number of really great individuals that have great experience. So I would probably ask for their resumes, ask them to gauge their interest, and then bring those to the mayor for her to recommend, make a recommendation to the council.
Yeah, get somebody that's already doing it elsewhere, and yeah, not a learning curve, and you can step right in and know what they're doing. You know. Because our current board, you know, it's so infrequent, it's not their profession that, you know, there's, I imagine there's plenty of prep work, research, because they're not as experienced as you are. So that's additional time.
I'm in favor of this. I have all the confidence that you guys could pick someone who would be really, would do a really good job, and you could maybe work in greater cities. I do like Brian's suggestion, though, about being specific about what those requirements would be, so that we just have it in writing why we chose that person, so that sometimes it's not just one person, sometimes it's certain people. For me, I love the legal aspect of it, protecting us from district court. So if we're going to do that, I prefer it would be an attorney who knows those in and out, and like you said, make decisions really clear, and just, you know, we're going to use that as a stopgap. I'd like to see someone who's highly qualified.
Yeah, I like the idea too of the appeals authority not being your neighbor, being a disinterested third party who is knowledgeable in the field of land use. And I agree with Brian about this comment about all the preparation that must go into preparing for one of these Board of Adjustments. And somebody who's doing this all the time is always prepared for something like this. And yeah, I support this idea as well.
Yeah,
So would you like to make a motion? I will make a motion that we approve ordinance 0707-2020A, amending City Code Title 9, 10, and 11 related to the Board of Adjustment and the creation of the position of a hearing officer to serve as the appeal authority for the City of Cedar Hills.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Councilmember Smith.
Councilmember Davis.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Move on to item number 7, which is a discussion of public hearing on an ordinance amending City Code Title 10, Chapter 5, related offenses. For the public hearing first, is there anyone here who wants to speak to this issue? No one is here, so we'll close the public hearing and move on to the discussion.
So we had noticed this item to come to the City Council report, the Planning Commission tabled it for further consideration. Just as an FYI, staff is having American Fork Police Department come and talk about safety as it relates to trail and architectural design, that what you called it?
Crime prevention.
Crime prevention. Environmental design and crime prevention. Josh, Lieutenant Christensen is so gracious to come to our next planning commission meeting and talk to the Planning Commission. So with that being said, I would probably just recommend the tables until the Planning Commission made a recommendation.
Sounds good, so I'd like to make that motion.
I move that we table item number 7.
Motion made by Councilmember Miller. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 8, which is to review action of public hearing on an ordinance amending City Code Title 10, Chapter 5, related to driveways. I will open the public hearing first, which is more of a discussion on this item. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing. Turn to members of the public.
So this proposal, it really centers on public safety as it relates to driveways. We have a number of homes along the hillside here that have steeper driveways, and in the past staff has required them to put in for compliance steps as part of the driveway so that in the event of emergency, public safety personnel can access the home. However, there's not a code or building code that requires that. So in order to kind of give that requirement to teeth, we're recommending to the City Council that that this be adopted, that this provision, that when driveways exceed 12% in slope, that code compliance steps be installed somewhere in the property, leading from the public right-of-way up to the main entrance. We recognize that each building situation is different, and sometimes there is a necessity for a steeper driveway than what is currently allowed in the City Code. This code would allow for those instances, given the provision of the code compliance steps. This did go before the Planning Commission, and they did make a positive recommendation.
Questions from the council?
And this was instigated by the Taylor home.
This is instigated by the Taylor home, but if you drive anywhere up in Canyon Heights and the townhomes, you'll find instances where this has been acted out in principle. And so it's time to actually put it in writing that this is the requirement. And obviously it can't be retroactive, but going forward, this will give the building official or enforcement official some ability to make sure that the homes are being constructed in a way that allow public safety to enter them in the same way.
And I just added, this is also at the request and recommendation of our fire marshal.
Correct. So where was the What was the city relying on when trying to address the issue with the Taylor home?
Apocryphal code.
It's
just that's the way that I was done in the past. To say, well, you can go over, but you need to put in code compliance steps. Well, in reviewing the code, there's no building code, nor is there any city code that required those steps.
Fire marshal wanted it. The city wanted it, but it wasn't codified anymore.
It wasn't codified in our code.
Yes, sir.
So, Matt, what the discussion of planning commission on this was today?
It was very brief. So, I think that they recognized the need for it. I think that some of the concern was about 12% or how great a period. You know, most driveways are looking at, you know, maybe 30 feet.
So I can't pull up this, and I'm sorry to name it the agenda, but so I don't know how it reads, but
Is it just to cover it? For instance, if you only have a street portion of your driveway, and then you flatten out, does it only have to be for that area that's where it's over the whole thing?
I think that's a question for Jeff.
Yeah, sorry, I don't have the mic, I guess. It's my understanding that the stair portion is only required where the driveway does not meet the requirements of a ramp. So if the driveway can be utilized as a code-compliant ramp, then that would be acceptable. And that's my understanding.
It's code-compliant 12%, that's our ordinance. I don't know if that's, certainly it's a handicap.
It's not ADA compliant.
But what about, what is the fire requesting? Are they okay to have a 12% ramp?
Yes. Okay. Part of it would be the ability for their vehicles to access in times of inclement weather and past 12% is concerned.
Because, I mean, there are former city council members that have very steep driveways.
You can do that, but I would love any discussion. There are changes that the council wants, so please do it at the same time.
Can you give me an idea of what a 12% grade is? What's the city office grade?
City office, I thought it was 8, 10?
Yes, the city is about 8. Your lower driveway is about 12.
Okay.
12 is very steep.
Okay. That gives me a good idea. My driveway is 12.
You've all visited the city building, and Jeff didn't go out and measure that slope, and it was 8%, right?
It is, just over 8%.
We're often talking about new builds, too, which we don't have a ton of.
There's not a lot of homes in this code. It also affects rebuilds, so if somebody were taking out their driveway and putting in a new one, mm-hmm. they would have to put in a plenty stuff. So.
Wait a minute. That would be impossible, then, of course, because a replaced driveway doesn't require permit.
Well, you're right, it doesn't, but.
Right.
I think we'd at least ask them to.
That could create some problems that could easily be resolved because the garage floor is at a fixed elevation and the street is also.
I don't like that. I personally don't like that because now you're requiring them something that was originally.
Well, then in that case, I think that they still need to be notified that of the code change and that the concern of public safety, the possibility that they may be unable to enter the home.
But still,
they're not required. But I just think they need to be notified of the change.
I don't think it should be enforced.
Okay.
If they want to do it, I think that's fine, but I don't think it should be important.
So you're saying if they're replacing their driveway?
Right, if their driveway was super cracked and they just wanted to replace it, I don't think they should be required to now put stairs if their driveway was too big.
Right. I agree if the driveway is going to keep the same form that it had before, but if they want to change it to a steeper driveway,
I agree with that, but I don't know why anyone would ever do that.
Yeah.
But I agree.
Yeah. But I think more importantly is we would never even know if they don't have to get a permit.
Right.
So we're not going to ride anyway.
That's definitely drive around to see it.
Yeah. We don't really.
Is that even the case if they had significant modifications to the driveway device? Yeah, that's not a license. That's not a permit. That's not a permit.
We don't create cement slabs as structures.
Huh. All right, I will take a motion then to table this item.
I will make a motion to table this item.
Motion by Councilor Geddes, is there a second?
Second by Councilmember Ellsworth, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passed unanimously. Moving on to item number nine is a review action on an ordinance amending City Code Title VI, Chapter 8, related to park curfews.
So with the opening of Harvey Park and all of the fun amenities there, we've had a number of complaints from people both early in the morning and late at night. Park hours right now, during summer, are 5 to 11, and during the school year, they switch to
5
to 10, yes, thank you. And we've had, from 5 to 7, we've had a couple complaints about pickleball noise from homes that are significantly far away from the home, from the pickleball area, I believe. And then at late at night, we've had a complaint from a PG resident, but we've also seen that there is a lot of activity in 10 to 11. I would actually ask Josh, as I recall, we moved park hours to try to be in congruence with what American Fork was doing, so the police officers didn't have two different enforcement measures based on their location. But given that, are American Forks still 5 to 11 right now?
Isn't that why we originally adopted that? Because that was, we were going to be consistent with.
We were trying to be consistent with American Fork. Now, there could be other provisions that we talked about when we put in place saying don't hit the ball, or you have to have sound reduced pickleball equipment from 5 to 7, and then after 7, you use normal pickleball equipment. There's like softer paddles and softer balls that make it produce sound.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you enforce that?
I asked for this to be on the agenda, and I emailed all of you for the reasons why. So as we have been talking about this with residents who have expressed concern, my first thought was just, we just recently updated the ordinance, so I don't see a need to do it again. But then when I was looking for another resident who is first concerned about something different, I came across section 5-2-2, which is public disturbances. And it was what I got interesting in there is that we do have a rule for all of our homes that, there's basically can't make noise from 10 to 7, and we in our code specifically call out sports and other entertainment activities in or adjacent to a residential zone between the hours of 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. And so, as I read through that with Chandler, I guess one of my frustrations was we have this rule for every home and business in our community that they have to be quiet, in essence, between 10 and 7. Yet for our city parks, also most of them adjacent to residential, we are saying it can be as loud as we want from 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. And so my recommendation was, I don't care if we want to change the public disturbances ordinance from 5 to 11, or if we want to shorten the parks from 7 to 10, but I feel like we as a city government should require the same of ourselves as we do of our citizens. We have the same rules for ourselves that we do for everyone else, especially knowing that all of our parks are adjacent to residential zones. So
I agree.
I don't necessarily care which way we go, I just think it should be consistent. We should treat ourselves the same way we do our homeowners.
That made a ton of sense to me. and I don't know, I was thinking about the issue with our police officers. First, I think they could probably swing it, the difference between our parks and American Forks. They're super bright. and my other suggestion would be that American Fork probably needs to make theirs in line too. But I do think that if we're going to require that of our individual citizens in their own homes, whether they're not disturbing their neighbors, we need to do the same thing for our parks. And my personal opinion is, I really don't want to see people in the parks after dark. I don't understand the need for that. I don't even love the 10 o'clock because I think we're just inviting trouble. I don't know who needs to hang out at the park when it's dark. That would be my inclination. I definitely don't like 5 in the morning. I know my street has screaming houses being built on it. And the 7 has been even tricky for us. It's, they don't start at 7, but they'll come at 6 and hang out and talk in their cars and plan what they're going to do and drop their tools. And it's still pretty noisy. I would want to see that change to 5 for sure in my neighborhood. And my leaning would be
to for sure bring it in with what we're requiring of our homeowners, but I would love people to go further, especially with Harvey Park, and not encourage people to be there on the site.
I have no objection to any of this. I agree with the mayor that, that these two items need to be incongruent. It does present some logistical challenges when you have to explain to somebody a piece of mental gymnastics to try to explain them why you can set it up, but not why you want
it. Yeah.
Also,
when you get woken up at 6:30, it does not matter how wholesome that activity is. So I can support what the council members said. And I also think that the only people at parks after dark are teenagers. And a lot of teenagers are good. Not all of them. Some of them are just rough and reckless, as we've seen with the equipment recently, but some of them are there for trouble. And if they're allowed to be there, it's harder for us to curb any negative behavior.
I am curious to know from Josh. I think the only thing that I really like about having a set time is it's super easy for law enforcement to enforce, where it's not 100% doubt, it's just this is the time, you're out by that time, and then they don't have to figure out what your interpretation of dark versus my interpretation of dark. And for law enforcement as well, that means that they've got to be at our parks at 5 o'clock in the winter to try to keep people out, and that's, I would see that as a challenge.
So, can I wait on this for a second?
Yes, please.
So, I live the closest to anybody to that park, right? So I'm taking a pretty good interest in it, because I go by it almost every night, or I drive over there every night. And I was just taking an informal, I have a decibel reader, I was trying to figure out if it, what the noise level really was. And from the street on Harvey, believe it or not, it's no more than just ambient talking. Now the popping of the pickleball paddles is a little bit of an issue, but the total noise is actually no higher than like 70 decibels at the most. That's less than me talking in this microphone. So, but the other point is, if we're going to have lights and things available, and it seems like the pickleball and tennis, and it really does take, I mean, you don't see kids over there other than the basketball court gets a lot of use till 11. The pickleball courts are completely full till 11. The tennis is usually pretty full, but either overfull pickleball is mostly whatever it is, like getting over the net. So I feel like it may just be a little bit of a, because it's new and it's exciting and it's a cool place to hang out. Because I've heard from teenagers that this is the coolest place that city girls to hang out around here to hang out. So I don't know if we need to react this quickly on things until we kind of let a season go by. That's just my feeling. Everyone does it. I mean, they have Arcade Park and they got a pickleball court with a house across the street around. I don't know how often they complain, but I don't know, Josh.
I would say to that though, it's not Harvey, it's not just Harvey we're getting complaints about. We're getting complaints about Heritage Park, we're getting complaints about Sacramento's Cove Park, and I used to review that Bayville Park. So it's not specific to that park, it's just that parks have become the hangout spot at night.
Yeah.
And so.
And I certainly agree. I hate the whole idea of vandalism. That really pissed me off, honestly. If it is the teenagers doing it at night, yeah. Although I have to say, it's not teenagers in the pickleball courts. Those are older people, and they're right next to the play equipment. But I don't know if they're actually the ones that the teenagers are hanging around there. I don't know. I don't have an answer for them. I'm not scientifically enough to figure it out. But
I've gone down there several nights. I just wear my name tag, so they know who I am, and I have asked teenagers to stop roughhousing that equipment because then they get broken. They've been pretty good, as long as they can see that I'm somebody official. If I'm just an adult, they don't
I've heard from many adults that when they talk to teenagers, they just get a really negative response and they don't care. I keep my tag up here, so when they're seeing my face, they can see that I'm from the city, and I've had a pretty good response. But every single night that I've gone, I've had to tell the groups, calm down. And I'm not really worried so much about the teenagers, because they can vandalize things in the middle of the day, too. I'm going back to this, I just felt strongly that our noise ordinance should be the same for our parks.
And the inconsistency, I do definitely agree with. I mean, I wouldn't mind changing it to match to go 10. And probably we're on the downward side of the, you know, the light and everything. I mean, maybe it is fine to just do it, maybe revisit it again next year. But I mean, I don't mind changing it if that's what everyone else would do. I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Sure.
So.
I think
I
like to
pretend
it's dark.
I think putting our park code in line with our code inspection residents is realistic. I mean, if anybody figured that out and said, why are we not just make noise, but in the park we can, I mean, we really do need to bring that in line.
So,
I think 7 is plenty early to start claiming anything. Why are people awake at that time anymore?
In my mind, I see this as two separate things. I see a noise ordinance and a parks being open ordinance. I think the noise ordinance should apply to the parks, but not change the time the parks are open, right? So if you're making noise at the park, let's say you're running, you're doing quiet exercise, whatever that is, that should be fine. But if you are doing extremely loud pickleball, that's a problem. I think the noise ordinance needs to apply to the parks, but not change the park hours.
How do you tell one person you can do this in the park that you can't do that? I think that's usually what happens anyway. I mean, if someone's over there just running and there's no need for anybody to be called or bothered, it's probably not going to be a problem.
I wouldn't want that person to be called out on the technicality of the park that's closed. They're doing it, they're running there. So, you know, there's a difference in activities, is in my mind here. So, in the end, I just
see two separate problems. American Parks the exact same way. They run a noise ordinance from, it's 10:30, but 10:30 to 7 a.m. But parks are closed from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. And like Councilmember Ellsworth said, it's almost two separate issues. Even as we've held city-sponsored events or big events where they've obtained a special event permit, they've had to be shut down noise-wise at 10:30. We require that. We've done that with our carnivals, things like that, because that's the noise ordinance. But that doesn't mean park closed, kick you out right now. We've still got some time to, you got a half hour to basically disperse. The mornings, same thing. There's a lot of use. The parks get a lot of use in those early mornings. There's a lot more activities that are not noise related. But definitely if you do make any changes, I would just recommend that it's make a set time.
So I guess you could say the park is open at 5, but none of the sporting activities are?
Yeah, just the noise ordinance is still in effect. I don't know if we're a part of signage to explain that, but
we're good at science.
I think you actually have a really good point.
I agree in the morning. I don't know about at night, though. I mean, like, while we're at this, I'd like to tackle it from a couple different angles, because there's a lot of things that teenagers should do at the park that aren't noisy. But I don't think if our world is providing a place to be from 6 to 11 when it's pitch black dark, and there's just no business to be there.
So, I like the idea of the half hour window. You know, if our noise ordinance says 10 p.m., let's close at 10:30. Unless you have some sort of exception approved by, you know, the city or whatever it be. But a half hour is plenty of time for them to go.
So you're saying 10:30 in the summer, because we're at 11? We're at 10 already.
Yeah, that's so 10 o'clock for the noise ordinance, which I think is not your realm, but you can find out.
That's your
realm. So 10 o'clock for noise ordinance, 10:30 close the park. That's your half hour window.
My only concern with that as far as the evening, I think it could work in the morning. My only concern in the evening would be having spent lots of time down there. The people who are there at 10 o'clock are not just going to suddenly be quiet at 10 o'clock. They're going to be quiet until, or they're going to keep what they're doing until police show up to take them out. And the more people who think that noise should stop at 10, but they can be there until 10:30, the more calls we're going to get to dispatch, and the more calls we get ready to dispatch, the likely that our calls are increased to behavior. Because if our calls exceed 12% increase in any given year, we have to pay higher contract amounts. So I, just having been there, even though the park closes at 11, they don't leave until either I'm there picking them out or American Parks people leave. They stay until somebody comes and picks them out. So if we say 10 o'clock is the closing, but you can stay till 10:30, they're going to keep doing everything they're doing until 10:30.
Did we fix the lights so they did not come on after about an hour?
So we do that now. I asked Chandler to have that adjusted. So right now the lights go off at 10:45. Because what I saw was it takes them a good 15 minutes to gather their stuff, find their people that are throughout the park, get to their car, and leave, and actually be out of the park by 11. But again, what I noticed is even when the lights go off, they stop playing, they congregate in one area and continue to play. Because the playground doesn't have any lights. So they'll just go to the playground and continue to play until AFP shows up, or I'm the one saying it's time to leave. They'll just keep being there until somebody kicks them out.
I like the 10 o'clock too, just because I would like for citizens to start like getting it in their heads that noise out there is 10 o'clock. You know, so if it's at your house or you're at the park, we all just get on board. Because I bet, you know, most people don't even know what the noise ordinance is unless they have to call on their neighbor or they have to call on them. So I'd like for people to kind of get some continuity too, that not this in this place and this in that place. So that would be, I don't know. I don't mind the 5 a.m. I don't see a lot of teenagers out at 5 a.m. I don't mind being in the park and maybe the noise ordinance like Ben suggested. I just don't see the point in a lot of talk about that.
I was in the people who live next to, like right adjacent to the parks. That would be their opinion as well.
Well, and having a teenager, I agree. There's no need for them to be at the park after 10 o'clock at night. Nothing good is going to happen. They don't need to be there. I'm fine with 5 in the morning if we have.
But I agree, fence is separate. Noise is separate than the curfew.
You need to address those separately. But
On the pickleball noise, I got two complaints early when the park opened. That first week, I got two complaints, two neighbors complained. I have not received complaints since then.
So, really?
Yeah.
That's the only ones we ever got? Only two we ever got.
Maybe it's like train noise, and they get used to it, or nobody's coming out at 5 in the morning, it's not new and fancy.
There are codes specifically says sports or other entertainment activities in or adjacent to a residential zone between the hours of 10 and 7. So technically, we have been violating our own ordinance by allowing people to play at 5 a.m.
Correct. Well, I think the pickleball are there. They're there at 6, I guarantee they're there. Whenever the light comes up, they're there.
I certainly wouldn't want to change our ordinance, our noise ordinance, anything like earlier than 7. So if we want to be in compliance with our own ordinance, we need to change that noise ordinance or change something.
There's nothing to change. It's just enforcing.
Enforcing that at the park.
It would be a sign, basically, to get a pulse saying you can't play sports here until 7. The courts don't open until 7 or something like that.
Would it just be the courts? Is there anything else down there?
It's like,
you know, it's
playing
baseball,
but sometimes you can add in kind of incidental use language where, let's say that in the middle of the night, my child is sick, and I didn't have the car, so I walked along the Forest Creek Trail to Walmart to pick up some medicine, and I walked home. That type of incidental use is not prohibited after 10 or 11, but it's a lot. It's recognized as you're just using it to get through. Mm-hmm. Same thing, like if I'm going running in the morning, I could just run through the trail from my house on Dorchester through the park and get on the Murdoch Canal Trail. It's kind of an incidental use. But
yeah.
Other than that, I can't imagine a use down there that
wouldn't be somewhat noisy. You have baseball, which I'm practicing batting practice at 5 in the morning. I'm sure someone's going to call. Squash pad's not open. Tennis is kind of a quieter sport, but pickleball, as we've seen, can be a little bit louder. But I would say that our pickleball courts are situated probably as far away from a residence, more so than any other pickleball courts I can think of in the area. Most pickleball courts from cities are smuggled right up next to a home.
And one other thing I have heard from, that's my neighborhood, right? So if I'm in my backyard, so I am about 3 houses off RV, long street away.
You're probably like 600 or 700 feet.
Believe it or not, in my backyard, occasionally I can hear a pickleball paddle. But if I go inside, it's completely silent. So what I've heard from my neighbors is that they leave their window when they hear the paddle. If they close their windows, they don't hear anything, even the ones that are right there. So
if we wouldn't allow, for instance, Greg to have a soccer practice happening to be parked at 6 a.m.?
I think you're going to get a pretty good pushback for that 1 hour between 6 and 7 initially for the walkways.
But I think we could get that same pushback from residents and we'd say sorry, right? I mean,
yeah,
when we start construction, somebody wanted to play basketball every morning, we might get pushback, but we're still going to say no.
We did tell somebody to do construction, know when they wanted to start.
Yeah, we haven't said we called them before. We do grant special exemptions. You said that before. They weren't happy. Life goes on.
No, I think we've got to have some rules called out about it.
So, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go on this. Tonight, we've just noticed that the change to the possible park curfew, not necessarily change to the noise ordinance, but I'm not hearing anybody really in favor of changing the noise ordinance times. So it really comes down to what you want the park curfews to be.
I'm not opposed to doing a on the curfew.
You're not, I'm sorry, say that again, please.
I'm not opposed to doing a 10 p.m. on the curfew.
10 p.m. year round?
They designated match our noise ordinance would be very easy to enforce. That's the number. But the morning is the one where you may have to leave me there at 5 a.m. opening, 7 a.m. police ordinance. That's one. I think we just need to very clear that there's police ordinance in effect still until 7 a.m. And signage to that effect.
Which I think that's fine as well. And I think reality is if somebody right now called and complained to AFP at 6 o'clock in the morning about pickleball noise, right now, according to our own code, AFP can tell them you're violating the noise ordinance, you need to stop. I don't know if they can, but I mean, they can't,
that is
our noise ordinance right now.
Anything
adjacent to a residential zone.
I agree that they could issue a citation, but I also agree that the resident could appeal that citation and we can just get into this murky mess that we're in right now.
Because the park's open, you're saying.
The park's open, yeah.
So then I would say if we want to keep the parks open at 5, then we probably need to just have signage at the court saying the courts are not, due to our noise ordinance, courts are open at
5. I agree. We have to sign it up.
Okay. I like that idea. But is that still going to help with the murkiness if they're like, well, the park's open? I mean, as far as I can see, nobody's reading. They're fabulous, but they're not getting it right.
They do look great, but nobody's reading.
Yeah. The streets are open all night, but that doesn't mean you can do anything you want all night on the street.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Did you tell some people that too?
Yeah. We need some signs for that.
Yeah. More signs.
Make sure that says it.
I'd be surprised if there isn't somebody who hasn't had an experience with the noise ordinance, which was, of course, I think people understand that. Yeah, I get it.
Mm-hmm. So does this ordinance need to be changed or anything? Are we good to
the
10 p.m. would be changed?
Yeah, change the 10 p.m. year round.
Are we thinking still 5 mm-hmm. in the yeah. morning to leave the parks open? Probably use it from 5 to 10, but then we adjust our noise.
Or what if you did this? You change the 11 o'clock to 10 o'clock year round.
but then you have park curfew from Labor Day. I mean, you have these late days, Memorial Day, Memorial Day, Labor Day. It really becomes a good plan that is.
Right, okay.
It's a set time all year round. But then you just add a language that says from 5 to 7, while parks may open, no activities may violate the city's going ordinance.
Yeah.
And if I can help us specify those the same way they're specified.
I would then you would just say as defined in section okay. Title 4 and
by definition. Then you
yeah.
take
some. Look it up a few times. Okay. Right, I'm not trying to ignore put my back to you, but that sounds right.
Yeah.
I think more than anything for me, it just shows that we're trying to recognize that living next to a park, there's a great side and there's some downside, but that we are going to enforce the same rules upon our park users that we do upon the people who own homes in our city. Again, if somebody had a pickleball court in their backyard and they were playing at 6 a.m., tell them we can't do that. It says in our ordinance they can't do that. So.
I agree.
Me too. So if somebody want to make a motion.
All of them have made the motion to approve ordinance number 0707-2020C.
B.
An ordinance amending title 6-8-6 of the city code of Cedar, of the city of Cedarville, Utah, related to curfew and parks and public property, specifying that the curfew will now be 5 a.m. extended year round for parks. With notice is at the parks that the sound, the noise ordinance is in effect at 7 a.m. So the same activities are prohibited from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. They are affected by the noise ordinance.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsberg. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Councilmember Smith. Councilmember Geddes.
Can I ask a question first?
Yes.
When is it in effect? Immediately or 30 days? Can we do it August 1st?
Yeah.
I'm fine with that if we can get signs up.
Okay. Then I'll amend the motion for a name to take back on August 1st.
Councilmember Smith, do you approve? Do you take? Still second that motion?
Yes.
All right. Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth, seconded by Councilmember Smith. Councilmember Dix.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Before we move off of this topic, Councilmember Smith, you wanted to talk a little bit about maybe having, this is a discussion only because it's on the agenda, but having official volunteers maybe helping with.
So I was just reading some of the comments on the Cedar Hills chat room. There were a few people who suggested what if people wanted to, by the way, we have the golf, our marshals, that maybe just for, even in the beginning, because it's kind of new. Anybody wanted, because I'll give you our example. My husband and I were there, and we asked some kids to stop throwing a Gatorade bottle at the small children who were coming down. And they said, do you work here? And he said, no. And they said, then shut up. So, yeah, I'm not going to tell you what happened after that. but I think that if we had someone with even a yellow shirt that said volunteer or something like that, just for a little while, so for kind of. Yeah, kind of a park marshal, if we got some interest. I'd be interested, and it's kind of the same thing as the trails to me, that we need some ownership, and we need some, a little bit of, like you said, I talked to a number of people, because we said, well, you should talk to the teenagers. Well, that's not going very well, I can tell you, because I saw other people talk to them. I tried to talk to the teenagers whose parents were standing right there, and that didn't go very well. So, before I get in this fight with someone, I would love it if, maybe we saw if there was any interest in that, and if we did, it would simply be enforcing the rules that are posted, so we would, we wouldn't ask them to do something else. But I think if some of the teenagers got enough of a, hey, somebody's gonna kind of be watching,
they might stop coming if they're not interested in behaving or contributing to park well, or not, if they get the word picked up and like, oh, there's somebody there who said, I'll be better, get off that, or, you know, whatever. We might take some of the novelty off of this, but just an idea. I caught it on Cedar Hills chat room. I thought it was interesting. I don't know if we want to see if anybody's interested in doing it.
Well, and I talked about this before, and I'm completely in favor of it, and I would be happy to volunteer to do it anytime. But I agree, it has to be in some sort of official capacity, so you say, listen, you know, I'm the park marshal, or whatever you want to say, and you're breaking the rules, and you can ask people to leave. Just, I have a kid fight me who's climbing on some electrical box, and I said, hey, would you mind getting down? He's like, why? Anyway, ended up not going well, because he didn't want to listen when someone asked him to do something, but if it was an official capacity, they might listen and respect the park, I don't know. But I think it's a great idea.
Something
you can talk about.
Yeah. I'm sure that we're not the first city that has tackled this problem, and I'm going to look at some other jurisdictions to see what others are doing.
Yeah, I just like a discussion on maybe what the options are. And like with the trails, I always feel like if you give people a little chance to have some ownership, to have some pride, it's just always be beneficial. So, and I'd like to, you know, like I said, it's not going well when just the citizens were asking, and I'm afraid it's going to. Because you know. I know I feel really passionate about the park when I go over there. I'm kind of protective of it, and so it's kind of buggy, and so sometimes emotions might be, you know, a little high. I can tell you that I got real high when someone told my husband to shut up. So, you know, I don't want to see that. So,
like I said, I mean, those laminated badges that Gretchen makes, they're not expensive, and so from a you know, if any of you want one, then you can make one. But my kids think I'm scary, but I don't think I really look that scary. So I don't think the random teenagers gonna think I look scary. But I really didn't have any pushback where they could see I had some official capacity.
Yeah. I think just that would be helpful. And I don't want to always be like, well, we're gonna call the police, because you know, we don't want to be calling them all the time for super simple things. But you know, so anyway, just an idea.
We can definitely research and bring it back to the council. All right, so moving on to item 10, review action on Vista Room reservation refunds during the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, so you probably saw the email that was sent out by an individual who reserved the Vista Room, and then unfortunately the coronavirus changed many people's event plans. But during the coronavirus pandemic, there have been many cancellations, obviously, here at the Vista Room. The cancellations came about as there were limitations on the number of sites and groups that were required by the state. The current contract states that refunds are non-refundable. However, many individuals have requested that refunds be given despite the contract language. I had the event staff reach out to other event centers in the area to find out what others were doing. And they said that after speaking with other venues, it looks like they surveyed about 8 or 9 other venues. It said like 87% keep the deposit and down payment, maybe 1 or 2, I think it was probably 1 out of 8, I would say, are refunding the deposits and down payments. They gave you a list of the dates that the event was booked, the event date. I went through that list and kind of highlighted, okay, which events were in the red phase, which events were in the orange phase, which events were in the yellow phase, and which events are yet to come. Because I don't believe, while we have strong language in our contract that says this money is non-refundable, based on whatever you guys want to do tonight, it's up to you. But I don't believe that all of these events are necessarily equal, if that makes sense. So in the red phase, there were 8 events. The value of those events that would be refunded would be $3,775. During the orange phase, there was only 1 event. That was $400. And during the yellow phase, there's another 8 events. That would be $3,200. That total is $7,375. The events that are still in July and into September, I'm going to be honest, I'm in no way, shape, or form inclined to refund as they can have their event here. There's just certain limitations on, not even on size, but on social distancing. So, of the $9,775 to date, shown here, I'm actually looking at $7,300 this. I asked them why are some of these events, there's a couple that are, the amounts are different, and that's because they get paid a certain amount at a certain time. So maybe they paid more than their deposit, they put it down, put it on their event, that was only personal refund. But, let me get back. So in that survey that we had them do, the Vista Room had the lowest deposit at $400 when compared to the other venues. So if you look in your supporting documentation, most of those deposits were, the next lowest was $500 all the way up to $1,000 for a deposit. So we're definitely at the low end of, if you want to look at the down payment as a sunk cost, we're definitely at the low end of the spectrum here. And then on additional refunds, if they paid money beyond their refund, looks like that's pretty split in terms of most of those event centers are keeping any payments that were made up to that point, while others, about a third, a little more than a third, were refunding additional payments that were made. So you got a request from a person that had their event canceled, and I wanted staff to prepare this for you so you kind of understood the scope of financial hit that this would have on the city. Most of these would be, in fact, all of these would be a reduction in revenues from last year's budget. So we can look at the use of last year's revenues, say about $7,000. The revenues right now, looking at, just changed my. Looking at going from about taking up, looks like about 170,000. I think they came in close to 160, and pulling it down to about 153,000 on their total revenues for last year. And even then, you may even want to look at differences in requirements. During the rent phase, you remember that there were, almost no events could be held. Well, during the orange phase, you could have up to, is it 20 people? Is that what it was?
10, I think.
And then yellow was 50. We put out information saying, hey, here's how we can pull off an event with 50. You stagger the times, you have a certain time that's designated for high-risk individuals to come in, and then beyond that, you say, okay, last name's A through G, you're 630 to 7, H through M, you're 7 to 730, and so forth. But many of the brides said, no, we don't want to do that. So this is where I say, not all these events are necessarily the same because the restrictions were different during each time. So, I've tried to make a case. I've tried to understand where the brides are coming from, where the renters are coming from. And I'm also trying to understand where the event center is coming from. Because if your policy is just, the deposit is refundable at any moment, then there's no skin in the game for anyone renting the room, and they just back out, and we're left with an empty date. So I know that we're not talking about events going forward. I'm trying to reduce this to just events in the past that have already happened. So I know these are unique circumstances, and staff's going to follow whatever council decides.
And right now, even though we're in yellow, it's been loosened even more. We pretty much hit.
If you want an event. That's why I'm not inclined to any event that hasn't happened yet. I'm not inclined to send them anything back because they can do an event. It just has to be, we don't even require them to wear masks during their event. We provide sanitation and we have these lovely hearts that are on the floor around the perimeter showing where they can social distance, but if we treat it as a private event, they can have many people here as long as they're social distancing.
Yeah. So I have a couple questions, Chandler. I emailed and said how many people would qualify. So is this the events that have been canceled by the renters, right? Or in case of the red zone, the ones who had to cancel.
Yes.
But are they necessarily, have all these people asked for their
I believe, no. Only two of them have asked, I believe.
Okay.
My understanding of this list is that these are events that have canceled and not rescheduled. Because we told them, we understand that you're canceling, we'll apply your deposit to a future date. And so I know some people, they took their date and they booked it for September of next year. 2021. So I want to commend the event staff because they took a very difficult situation and really tried to work with their clientele to build that rapport in order to say, hey, we're willing to work with this event.
So we've got two people who don't want to reschedule, basically.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And I mean, I think there's a number of other people that just canceled and walked away with their deposits.
Right. But we have two that are basically looking for a refund and they didn't want to reschedule.
Yeah. And so it's the loud minority. But
right.
I do think that the practice is, you know, synonymous with what other event centers are doing, but this has kind of come to a head because in these cases, one of them went on and gave the Cedar Hills Business Center a really poor Google review, and then the golf center, the golf club, a very poor review, and then I think they reviewed the city, and we had to get those reviews removed as they weren't applicable to golf or the city. So
we have staff to come back with what the total amount would be, because if we do refund these two and work it out, then we have to do the same thing for the other ones that have similar circumstances. So that's why we wanted to start.
I haven't even asked.
But what about the ones that are just in the red or even orange, where they had absolutely no control over their event being canceled?
And you're hitting right on what I'm trying to say, is that these events aren't all the same, because I know it's not a fun reception to have 50 people at a time, but you could still do it.
Yeah,
In the yellow phase. Red and orange, I'm much more sympathetic to the fact that
me too.
This was a total wrench thrown into your plans.
Right. My sister fell into that category. Not here, but at Northampton House. Mm-hmm. She lost thousands of dollars in deposits from Laura's photographers. Yeah, all the vendors.
But to that point, it's not just the city of Cedar Hills saying
it's
you walked away from your deposit's not refunded.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do think that there's a human aspect here. So that's what I'm trying to differentiate between when the event was in terms of phasing up the guidelines.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm sympathetic to the red and orange phase. Also the yellow, too. That's no fun to have to stagger your guests. But it was certainly an option, and you could have had other guests come.
Yes.
Do we know where the people who are actually asking for refunds are land?
I haven't taken names off, so I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't want the names to be in the public comment.
Right, because I guess my struggle would be, I wouldn't mind if they are both in the red, and then we create a domino effect for the red, but if somebody's in the yellow, and then all of a sudden all our yellows, we've got to get their money back. If we do the reds, for example, is that even going to solve our problem if these two people aren't in red? Do you know what I'm saying?
I do see what you're saying, but I mean,
I'm not sure it matters.
In this case, I'd say you solve your problem by making a decision.
Right.
So you could say, and I guess in terms of impartiality, you can't make a judgment based on the email you received because you don't know which event they followed, and I honestly don't either.
Yeah.
I didn't want their names to be on the sheet in terms of public document. But you could say, look, we are sympathetic to the red and the orange, and we feel like the yellow phase
could have had
the event. You could say that the yellow phase couldn't have had the event. That's really up to you. And then say, this is the decision City Council made. Because your date fell within the next guideline, you are eligible for a refund or you're not eligible for a refund.
Kevin, mm-hmm. do you know what the other entities that were surveyed, were they public event spaces, or
my guess is they're majority of private.
Okay. I'm just wondering, I'm trying to think what differences we might want to consider as a municipality. What about matching their deposit for a future if they reschedule? So
we allow that.
Well, I mean, so
matching, like saying we'll give you $400 off the future. Then.
Yeah, you can apply. Well, you can apply your deposit, and we'll match $400. Basically,
that's an option. I mean, to say
that way, when I
want you to have your event here, whether it's
we're giving your
away now or a family reunion next year, we want you to have an event here.
Yeah, we're giving them the benefit, but we're not giving. You know, money's not leaving the city.
Can they also color?
Well, we'd want to put a time frame. I mean, I had noted in my notes March to May or June to red and orange.
I mean, you want to put out 5 years so that it is in junior high, can use it.
Could they also, though, I mean, I feel like any of these people, like, if you're going to let them do a future event, I mean, technically, they could offer that to someone else they know who's having a wedding, and that person could give them their $400 back.
You know, honestly, I don't know if it's transferable over the contract.
No, it isn't through us, but they
could. They could do that.
Yes.
Yeah, they could on their own, which maybe we wouldn't want to do if we were to give them a $400 discount. If they aren't the one that used it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I mean, it seems like at any point, if we're going to say you can reschedule, you can say, I've seen people all over the internet saying, I have a deposit at Bella Vista. If you've got a future date coming up, we already have a wedding, you can have, you know, my future date and paying back my deposit. Mm-hmm. I've seen a few of those, so I don't know if that would work. I am sympathetic to the reds, not so much, I mean, of course I don't think it is, but you know, the 9/19, you know, if you had already, if you decided you wanted to get married during quarantine, that's kind of on you, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's why I felt like I needed to filter these events out.
Right. I like Brian's idea. I think where we're letting people reschedule, I think there are some workarounds, even maybe for some of our red people. How many reds, Stephen?
Eight.
Yeah. So this, you know, this whole shutdown, this government owns all that. So I think I'm with everybody with red and orange having an option for me, but definitely pushing those for reasons.
Do you want to give them the option of you either have your refund or we'll apply you an extra, we'll match your deposit, like Councilmember Miller is saying?
Good option.
I think that's a great option.
I would take that, like, if it were me. I mean, that's going to make you $400.
You know, in my mouth,
I kind of got the idea of Ticketmaster, obviously, kind of concerts were canceled. They said, we'll give you the option of a refund, or we'll give you $150, or I'm sorry, 150% credit that expires 18 months or 2 years from now.
I like that idea.
And then we keep their business, we'll make money and keep them for a future date.
Right. And I would be happy with that if you offered that to me where my event had to be canceled, not by my own choice. That's it. Great. I'll use that. I'll definitely use that.
Do you want to do a dollar for dollar match or?
$200
for
sure. But I would put
an expiration date on that as well. Just
yeah.
So it's when you're up there.
A year or like 18 months? I mean, what would be a good time limit for such a thing?
I put it through like the end of, I think, a month.
That's crazy.
We're expecting this to next year.
Yeah, because well, you could go back to orange later this fall.
That's true.
You could, but keep in mind that you are in yellow right now and you can't have an event right now.
Right.
So
yeah.
We could be in yellow for quite some time. So if you wanted to have an event here of any sort.
But I'm saying doing at least a year and a half,
yeah.
If something does change, you still have time.
Yeah.
So these deposits are, what, 50% of the event?
No, they're
flat. Okay.
50%
of the rental fee for what is the deposit? How is the deposit amount determined?
The deposit amount is just set.
It's just
a
flat
fee.
Yeah, just a
flat fee.
$400.
What
does it cost to have an event in the Vista Room?
On a Friday or Saturday night, I believe if you're a non-resident, somewhere in the realm of, I want to say, $1,500 to $2,000.
Okay, if you're a resident.
If you're a resident, it's
like. Like $1,800, I checked for my daughter.
It's a few hundred dollars less. So
okay.
I mean, if you're renting it on a resident rate night, I mean, that $400 can cover your entire event almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's the sentence on meet by the six after then?
That was extra monies paid, and they refunded half of the additional monies that were paid.
Okay. So. Question maybe is, do they get 400 plus 400 credit or 400 plus 200 credit? And like, where do you want to go with that if they don't take the refund?
I'm more towards 400 plus 200.
Like 150% Ticketmaster
yeah.
refund?
Yeah.
Well, I agree with Ben, but my question is, are we
with what you just said, are we leaving the option of either or are we saying we're not doing refunds? We're not giving you the choice of getting your $400 back, but we will let you reschedule, plus we will add this $200 on.
My preference for red and orange would be to do an item. Some people just flat out cancel.
I agree.
They're not going to reschedule anything.
Yeah. Some people have already gotten married, had their small event, and they're done. Yeah. So for red and orange, I want to give them an option.
That's what my recommendation
would be. A refund or a match of some sort?
Right.
Yeah. Refund or match. Or 150. And in yellow, I right. say you've got to reschedule.
Yeah.
And we'll sweeten the pot with $200. Yeah, maybe Yellow doesn't have the choice of the refund, but they have the choice of the,
Well, right now they can reschedule. It doesn't matter COVID or not, you can reschedule.
And the 400 goes towards.
I don't want that wrong.
So for Yellows, if, for example, we'd just be talking about possibly sweeping the pot with the $200.
You could, except for right now we're in Yellow, and you can have 3,000 people in an indoor setting.
So I'd be nothing for Yellow.
I would say nothing. Reschedule, treat it like a refund, because right now you can have.
We can have it. They're just choosing to cancel it.
I agree. So yeah, so let me get this right. I got red and orange. You had an option of refund or a $200 match. I don't want to say 150% match.
Yeah.
It's a little bit confusing. Making it maybe even $600.
Yeah, right. Deposit plus $200.
Yeah. And then Yellow was no refund.
It's just regular.
A lot of reschedule.
Sam's what we do. Refund.
And I could get on board with these $600 and $775 getting everything but their $400 back.
I think we've already refunded them.
I think he said half.
They refunded half, so there's still some money that they were not refunded.
Yeah.
I would say up to $200.
That's kind of not fair. They paid the extra, but then. No one else did, and then they don't get it back.
I would say they're still limited to $200. It's not a 150%. So if you're paid $600, you don't get $300 and $200.
Sure. Correct.
And you want to put a timetable, a sunset date on this?
I think the end of 2021 is better. So you just don't know how the rest of this year is going to look. So it's like a whole solid year to. Because if you try to give it to someone else, they can't have a wedding either, so nobody wants to have weddings, or a family, the rest of this year is so murky, it'd be hard to anybody have an event.
I'm going to get into the semantics here.
December
2021, does that mean that the event has to be scheduled by 2021 or within?
No, it has to be held.
By December 31st.
Otherwise, you'd be dragging it out for 10 years.
Yeah. Okay.
So somebody needs to make a motion on all that.
Chandler?
I will repeat what I have right now.
Okay.
I said those events that are scheduled during those events that were canceled due to the red or orange phase are offering a refund or a match of their deposit plus $200. And those events in the yellow phase, no refunds are being given, but we would allow to reschedule. All rescheduling must occur through 2021. Yeah. Some time between 2021.
Real quick question on that. So right now, pre-COVID, if somebody wanted to reschedule, we will allow them to use their existing deposit to reschedule. Do we put a time limit on that right now? Because if we don't, then we shouldn't for the yellows either.
I don't believe so. So that $200 match, I think, needs to be just for red and orange.
Yeah, so I would put a
limit on that match and on the reschedule.
Well, the reschedule with the match, right?
So then,
the red and orange.
So then if they schedule within before December 31st, 2021, there's a $200 credit on their account. If they schedule after that, it's just their plus like normal.
Right, so you all
back entire
$400.
They're not forfeiting that $400, it's just they're not getting the incentive.
Yes. But for yellow, they don't have to reschedule item anyway. We wouldn't have required that for you.
No.
Okay.
So we're not requiring that of red and orange.
I would just say that the same contract provisions apply.
Yes.
Okay. Can't you just say what Chandler said?
Yes.
Okay. All right, then.
I'll make a motion to direct staff to issue refunds, not issue refunds based on applying criteria, issue refunds or give a $200 credit to anybody who canceled due to credit for orange phases, which will sunset by December 31st, 2021.
Do you want to add to that?
I would give that yellow.
This is the.
Yellow policy applied as the standard policy.
Okay, motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth, is there a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Councilmember Anderson, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passed unanimously. I'm assuming you'll follow up with that.
Yes.
You're not resident, but sorry. Okay, so I need a motion on number 11 to go into closed session.
I move that we adjourn and go into closed session.
You have to read that whole thing.
Sorry, let me go back there. Motion to go into closed session pursuant to Utah State Code 52-4-205. One E to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation.
And can you also indicate where it's being held?
And this closed session is being held at the Cedar Hill Sister.
Motion by Councilmember Anderson, is there a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Councilmember Smith.
Aye. Aye.
Motion to have this one in closed session. And then it's to adjourn, so we would like to make that motion.
I move that we adjourn.
Motion by Councilmember Anderson, is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Miller, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned, thank you.